You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Katrine Bruner. This is the WFHB local news for Thursday, July 8th, 2021.
Later in the program, we have the latest edition of Prescription for Healthcare, a podcast collaboration between WFHB and Medicare for All Indiana. More coming up in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we have coverage on Envision Ellettsville, a local initiative that aims to hear from the town of Ellettsville to make long-term improvements to the community. More in today's headlines. But first, your local news brief. From WFHB, this is your local news brief for Thursday, July 8th. I'm Katrine Bruner. Coronavirus cases for Indiana have jumped in the last week, rising 39% higher than the previous week. A total of 2,025 cases were reported, according to USA Today. Indiana is one of the 28 states that has seen more cases this past week than the week before. In the latest week, cases in the United States have overall increased by 10.4%. Many cases and deaths were not reported during the 4th of July, which could shift the week-to-week comparisons. Indiana counties Lake, Marion, and Vanderburg have seen the worst increases so far. After the storms affected Indiana businesses and residents in June, federal officials have decided to open two disaster loan outreach centers this week. Both centers are scheduled to open Friday at 8 a.m. and will be located at the Monroe County Convention Center in Bloomington and the Madison Area Chamber of Commerce in Jefferson County. Hours of operation are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Saturday, July 10th, from noon to 5 p.m. The sites will close on Friday, July 16th, at 5 p.m. According to the U.S. Small Business Administration Administrator Isabella Casillas Guzman, certain low-interest disaster loans were a cause of Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb requesting a disaster declaration. WFIU News stated that there will be a borrowing limit of $2 million for businesses and nonprofits, and loans of up to $200,000 available to homeowners. Homeowners and renters may borrow up to $40,000 to repair or replace personal property. The deadline for filing for property damage is September 7th. Bloomington Digest released their daily weather forecast for the week. Today's high is 84 degrees with a low of 63. There are chances of showers and thunderstorms throughout the day with 7 mph winds. That's all for your Thursday news brief. For WFHB, I'm Katrine Bruner.
At its July 7th meeting, the Monroe County Board of Zoning Appeals discussed variances to an area in Perry Township. County Planner Drew Myers presented two slope variances and a front yard variance for a property in the 3300 block of South Spring Branch Road. He said the city recommended approval of the front yard setback, but denial of the slope variances. Myers stated the petitioners could avoid the slope variances by redesigning the home.
Staff recommends denial of the buildable area variance from Chapter 804 and the Eco Area 3 variance from Chapter 825 in that there are no practical difficulties. Specifically, the slope issues can be more effectively addressed through the redesign of the development, building, or structure. Planning staff had communicated to the owner that if they were to build up, and not out more, that they would also help reduce the disturbance to the area and those slopes, and that it's just very difficult for a structure in this area based on those steep slopes and being in the Eco Area 3. which is the Lake Monroe watershed.
Resident Peter Chadwick showed concern that the lot for the home was only 1.4 acres. He said the other neighborhood homes were built on at least 2 acres of land.
I'm on 2.14 acres. And almost all our houses in this neighborhood are on plus 2 acres, even some even more than that. And I think that's a lot of house to put on a small plot.
Board member Margaret Clements questioned why the petitioner did not have to obtain a lot size variance. Myers clarified that it did not have to abide by certain zoning restrictions because the lot was recorded before the zoning ordinance. Board member Skip Daly asked Myers if the resident objections were relevant to the board's decision.
We're not deciding anything about the 2 acre concern of the neighbors then. That's not relevant to our decision today, correct?
Oh, it's relevant in the sense that the neighbors have voiced their concern, but from a zoning ordinance perspective, that does not apply here because of the Chapter 833 doesn't require a minimum lot size for this particular zone.
Clements moved to deny the front yard setback variance due to remonstrances by residents of the neighborhood. Board members voted to deny the variance 3-1, with board member Skip Daly voting no.
The Bloomington Board of Public Works discussed multiple lane closures. At the July 7th meeting, planning technician Mike Stewart presented a request for lane closures on 4 Bloomington roads to let the petitioner lay fiber lanes for AT&T. He said the work on South Sayre Road would be the most impactful. Stewart listed 2 closures that would be minor and a 4th closure on North Kinzer Pike for aerial work.
Really, there is only one closure part of all of these projects that's going to have a very high impact. That is on the Sayre Road. We're anticipating that that's going to last approximately 11 days. This is Lineal Contracting doing fiber installation for AT&T. And that's going to be the one that will have the highest impact. But since we were already coming to this session, we also wanted to kind of bring forth to the board that they will also be on North Kinzer Pike doing aerial work. And part of that project as well is going to be going down West Rosewood Drive, which was recently paved. So also just kind of acknowledging that if they do any potholes or anything like that to spot for water mains when they cross the road, they're going to have to mill and pave. Even if it's a 6-inch by 6-inch, they're going to have to mill and pave 20 feet in all directions to get that road back to, you know, its initial glory. They're also going to be on South High Street and East Hillside. Those are going to be a day or two and shouldn't be anything that's very high impact.
Board member Beth Hollingsworth asked about exclusivity around the fiber lanes. She asked petitioner Brian Busick if other companies would be able to lay fiber once the lanes are built.
Did AT&T bid for these lanes, or can other, like Smithville, can they also put fiber optic lanes in the same areas? It's going to be more than just AT&T in there?
That would be depending on the right-of-way easement. They should have access to it if they want to do something through there.
Board members approved the closures 2-0.
HealthNet Bloomington Project Director Nancy Richman gave an update on the HealthNet Bloomington Health Center at the July 7th Monroe County Commissioners meeting. She said the health center has seen nearly as many patients in the first 6 months of 2021 as it did in its first year of operation.
So last year was just obviously an unusually ridiculous year to build a new practice. Nevertheless, we had over 1,400 unique patients that came to the center, which is more than Volunteers in Medicine would have in a typical year. So you have a report that has a lot of demographic data from last year. Normally I don't include that in annual report, but I thought you might be interested in what the first year looked like for us. Interestingly, in the first 6 months of this year, we already have seen almost 1,200 people. So we are almost halfway through the year. I mean, we're halfway through the year and have almost seen the full amount of people we saw last year for the entire year.
Richmond said the biggest difference between Health Net and Volunteers in Medicine of Monroe County, the nonprofit she used to run, is that Health Net is not a free clinic. She said this lets them continue to treat low-income residents as well as residents experiencing homelessness.
Right now, in the first 6 months of this year, 60% of our population is insured, 46% with Medicaid. That means we're seeing a low-income population primarily, which is what FQHCs were designed to do. They're the safety net medical system across the country. And people experiencing homelessness, which was the VIM population, except then when they started getting insured, we couldn't see them any longer, which is very frustrating for us because seeing people living in poverty, experiencing homelessness is exactly essentially the specialty area of VIM and Health Net.
Richmond added that Health Net Bloomington has a grant to help with travel. She said residents who need help traveling to the clinic can receive it. The next county commissioners meeting is July 14th.
The town of Ellettsville is the second largest community in Monroe County, its history being rooted in the limestone and manufacturing industries. Members of the community have come together to see how they can improve the town moving forward, from business development, affording housing, and infrastructure improvements. That's the goal of Envision Ellettsville, a local initiative that formed from a partnership between the Greater Ellettsville Chamber of Commerce and Ellettsville Main Street Incorporated. Krista Curtis, co-chair of the Envision Ellettsville Committee and member of the board of directors at the Greater Ellettsville Area Chamber of Commerce, described the objectives of the project.
First of all, I would say Ellettsville holds a unique position in our region. And recognizing that, we created a dedicated group of volunteers who've really come together to establish this Envision Ellettsville project. And it's a Envision Ellettsville is a community project with the goal of creating a shared vision for the future of Ellettsville. And we want to develop that vision with community input.
Curtis says they're still working on gathering feedback from members of the community. She says Envision Ellettsville has contracted with an Indianapolis-based development firm in order to receive relevant input from members of the community. She discussed what limited feedback they've already received from town residents.
The kinds of things that you would, I think, expect to hear is what we heard. We heard about affordable housing, that we need to make sure that there are different types of housing for the different types of people and families who want to live in Ellettsville. We heard about more amenities, that people are looking for more amenities, public spaces to gather, trails, parks. So those are definitely things that we heard. We heard that people want to and like having a downtown area. They want a place that we can say that's the identity and that's sort of the heart of our community. So those are some things we've already heard from some of those more active community leaders, but it's important for us that we're inclusive in our feedback. We want to hear from all the different types of people who either live in Ellettsville now or might think about or consider living in Ellettsville in the future.
Kyle Hannon, project manager for Envision Ellettsville, said of the project, quote, "This is Ellettsville taking the reins of its future," end quote. Curtis explained what he meant by that.
Ellettsville has been experiencing a lot of interest. There are people who are literally knocking on the door of the town, saying, we are interested in development projects in this community. We're looking to maybe relocate our business here or, you know, build a new business. And there's a lot of interest in people also building homes in Ellettsville. There aren't a lot of areas for growth opportunities in Monroe County. So I think a lot of people look at Ellettsville and see an opportunity. And so what we recognized is that all of those people, while that's great to have that interest, if we weren't careful and we didn't have a plan for our future, those people might be dictating what our community looks like in the future versus us saying, sure, come on in. We'd love to talk to you, and we want to show you our plan for the future and how we think you fit into that plan.
Curtis says she remains hopeful the community-wide group, made up of mostly volunteers, will move forward with residents' input at the forefront.
I think one of the great things about this, about Envision Ellettsville, is it really is a cross-community volunteer work group. We do have a paid project manager in Kyle Hannon, and we are working with Taylor Group out of the Indianapolis area. But the rest of the work group includes business leaders, town officials, economic development professionals, non-for-profit leaders, educators. It's really nice to see that group come together and share their perspectives and their expertise. And then the next step is really bringing the residents into the project and getting their input. So for me, it's really exciting to see this cross-section of people who are coming together and that we're all focused on the same thing. Everyone has a passion for Ellettsville, and we're all focused on creating a very positive future for our town.
As for the future, Curtis says for the next 6 to 8 months, the group plans to talk to as many people in the community as possible. For more information, you can contact the Ellettsville Chamber of Commerce at 812-876-6611 or visit ellettsvillechamber.org/envision-ellettsville.
Now it's time for Prescription for Healthcare, a once-a-month podcast collaboration between WFHB and Medicare for All Indiana. In today's segment, hosts Karen Greenstone and Dr. Rob Stone continue their conversation with Dr. Mark Bauman, a physician at Indiana University Health Bloomington Hospital and professor at IU School of Medicine who specializes in pathology. Prescription for Healthcare is available online at WFHB.org, and it's also available wherever you get your podcasts.
From Bloomington, Indiana, welcome to Prescription for Healthcare on WFHB Community Radio, sponsored by Medicare for All Indiana. I'm Karen Greenstone, along with Dr. Rob Stone.
Hello.
Today, we're listening to part two of our interview with Dr. Mark Bauman. Dr. Bauman specialized in pathology and practiced community medicine at Bloomington Hospital. He transitioned to full-time teaching 9 years ago in the IU School of Medicine on the Bloomington campus. His undergraduate course, Healthcare in America, examines the historical development of the healthcare system in America, compares it to delivery systems in other countries, and asks if we can envision a healthcare system that meets society's obligations to our fellow neighbors.
Okay, we are back with Dr. Mark Bauman, and we were talking at the end of the last segment about the final exam that the students take. The exam is to write a letter to the president, and he shared some of these letters to me from the class this year, which I participated in as a faculty person helping with one of the segments of the class. The students wrote some amazing things in these letters, but I'm going to read just the first paragraph of one of the letters to the president that one of the students wrote. And so, "Dear Mr. President, in my years living in the USA, I have been genuinely shocked by the state of our healthcare system. I find myself in disbelief that the United States of America, a country which is patriotically dubbed the greatest country in the world, has a healthcare system in which health is not a basic right or something people have easy access to, but a privilege only available to the wealthy and fortunate. American politicians should be ashamed that they are leaders of a country in which the citizens that they represent are forced to skip prescription medicines, avoid seeing a doctor, or going to the hospital simply and solely because they cannot afford it. However, rather than making an emotional plea to you in this letter, I will be detailing what I believe are the fundamental issues with our healthcare system and the relevant solutions to them. I hope you will consider these points carefully as their implementation will not only significantly improve the lives of American citizens, but it will also assist in accelerating the USA back to its position as a global standard and leader in society and politics. That must have knocked your socks off a little bit to read somebody write something that powerful and eloquent.
And that was only the opening paragraph.
Exactly.
I remember that one. It was written, allow the student to remain anonymous, but it was a student whose family immigrated from a Middle Eastern country maybe 8 to 10 years ago. And now that student's parents are of Medicare age. And of course, they're having difficulty as non-citizens getting into that system. We did this course on Zoom during the spring semester, and the look on her face when she described the difficulties that her parents were having trying to integrate into the system, the U.S. healthcare system. Here, they had managed to escape literally a war-torn country in the Middle East, coming to the beacon of light of the United States, only to find great disappointment and how sad she was and disappointed to come and discover the reality of our current situation here. But then she goes on to list maybe two more pages, specific proposals of changes that could be done, proposals that are not pie in the sky, but are politically feasible and rational with good sustaining underlying arguments.
Amazing. Yeah, powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I can see the three of us are brought to tears on that.
Yeah, this is really powerful stuff. And it's so obvious. Yeah. And yeah.
So, Dr. Bauman, what is your prescription for healthcare?
It would be nice just to be able to type in a script and send it off and solve the problem. It's, as you both well know, a little more complicated than that. I think the underlying theme is that changes have to be done incrementally. In the course of review, the struggles FDR went through to initiate Social Security, and he tried a national healthcare system and that failed. Truman tried. He was unsuccessful. Nixon tried, Clinton tried, on down the line. President Obama at the time realized it was too heavy a lift to try to completely overhaul the entire system and go directly to a single payer system, which, as I understand, was his intent. And from my reading of his writings and so forth, he would have preferred a single payer system, but he had enough political savvy to take the approach of an incremental process. So he had to have buy-in from the insurance industry, hospital industry, pharmaceuticals, and physicians. So everyone gathered around the table and there was good back and forth compromise. It was an incremental process of working into the system certain guardrails, such as guaranteed issue of health insurance policies, no lifetime limits on coverage, expanded government access to insurance via Medicaid. So my prescription is that a step at a time, two steps forward, one step back, maybe a half step forward, two steps back, but with the overall goal of being moving forward to a universal coverage as other countries have done. And my role in all this is not so much as a political activist, but as an educator. And that's how I feel I can be most effective to shed some light on these topics. And then, Rob, as you said, when these things come to the light of day, I think we can come to a good consensus on how we can establish some sense of solidarity and come to a bit of an agreement how we can best take care of each other.
Incrementally, I have just been reading that enrollment in the, what's it called, the changes has increased since the Biden administration has opened up enrollment. So that goes along with your prescription for incremental change.
The previous administration, of course, narrowed the window of eligibility for sign up that window, and they drastically cut back on the advertising that window. And so the first thing that President Biden did was to reopen that window of eligibility, not simply from the late fall to the early year, but now open it up for a couple more months and then advertise it. So there was direct action they're taking. That's another example of increased access to health insurance, government-sponsored health insurance.
What do you think of this idea of lowering the Medicare age to 60 or 55?
Yes, I would agree with that. Medicare is so daggone complicated. Mm-hmm. Part A for a hospital, Part B for a provider, and then Part D for drugs, and then you need a supplement, or you go with Part C. And as I go through those items with the students in the class, they look at me as if I have, you know, three eyes type of thing. Uh-huh. And they think, how can Granny and Grandpa ever hope to understand which of the hundreds of drug plans they should sign up for? It's very confusing to savvy undergraduate students who pick up on things fairly quickly. So Medicare expansion would certainly, I think, would be a good step. That will introduce more people to government-sponsored single-payer and find out that it's not so bad. It's too complicated right now. Another possibility would be a public option. And that runs into great opposition from the insurance industry, with the fear that the nose of the camel gets under the tent. People find out that the overhead cost for a government-sponsored and insured plan is much cheaper, and you don't need all the excess expense for profit healthcare industry. So there's always been opposition to that public option. But that would be something I think that could even be more effective.
As we're running out of time here, I also want to add that our youngest took your class 10-ish years ago and said it was his favorite class in his whole IU education.
Well, I remember Ari very well. He was very a dedicated student, and I think he inherited a lot of your genes.
I'm going to have to ask him about the letter to the president. I don't think I ever saw that. I'd like to see that.
Usually we mail the letters off in early December or mid-December, and then usually around February or March, I'll get a flurry of emails from students because they will take a picture of the letter they received back from the White House on the White House stationery.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
Addressed to them individually on the letter.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful. They're very proud and very happy to have received a response from the White House. Someone's listening. That every president reads every letter, but they are excited to get a response. And it engages them in the process.
Our thanks to Dr. Mark Bauman. Medicare was signed into law by President Lyndon Johnson on July 30, 1965. Medicare, 56 years old, is the model for improved and expanded Medicare for all. As Dr. Bauman asks, if we can envision a healthcare system that meets society's obligations to our fellow neighbors. A prescription for healthcare on WFHB Community Radio. Until the next time, this is Karen Greenstone and Dr. Rob Stone. To your good health, everyone.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Katrine Bruner, Cade Young, and Jake Jacobson in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Rob and Karen Greenstone.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Katrine Brunner.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, coming up next on WFHB.